We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rob Doster here. I got Jeff Goodman with me.
Hell no.
John Tate.
Are we still live?
Till the 68 till I die.
I'm sorry, man. I blacked out.
Randolph Children.
DJ Khaled. You know the big DJ Khaled guy?
Hands broke up and in.
Goodman needs to be fired all the time.
Josh Pastner.
You're going to beat people straight up.
You know the deal.
They have no swag. They have no nothing.
Terrell McNeil.
From the bluest of the blue bloods to the smallest of the mid-majors.
This is Field of 68. After Dark.
Hello and welcome to the Thursday evening edition of the Field of 68 After Dark. We're going to be live here for the next hour, taking you up to the NFL draft. We are not going to get Jeff Goodman's breakdown of the best quarterbacks and whether or not he thinks Caleb Williams is going to be a good fit with the Chicago Bears. We are going to talk about Purdue and Illinois. We are going to talk about Trey Townsend committing to Arizona. We are going to talk about whether or not Marquette rolling the dice on not going after any transfers in the portal is a sustainable way to operate a program in the year of our Lord 2024. We're going to hear from Michigan head coach Dusty May, who may or may not have been driving. I'm not going to confirm whether or not that was true because I don't want to get him in trouble or arrested with the Michigan State Police. And Goodman is going to dive into whether or not new hires have ruined the market when it comes to NIL and the amount of money that is being spent on certain players. But before we do any of that, Jeff, we have some big news. It's not quite breaking anymore. It was barely breaking yesterday when you broke the news, but RJ Davis, first team All-American, ACC Player of the Year, arguably the best guard in college basketball last season, maybe now the preseason National Player of the Year. Is that going too far? He announced, well, he didn't announce, but he is coming back to school, according to your sources. He's going to be the only first-team All-American that is back in college next season, a guy that averaged 21 points per game for a number one seed and an ACC champion. RJ Davis is back, baby. What does it mean for North Carolina, Jeff?
It means that they've got maybe the best guard in the country back, a guy that they could put the ball in his hands and tell him to go make a play. And, you know, he put up, you know, we talk about empty numbers. And what RJ Davis did was he put up actual numbers that meant something last year for a winning team. And he was the cornerstone of that team. Now, they had a lot of good pieces. Obviously, we know they brought in some really good transfers that fit, that worked together, right? Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan, you know, Elliot Cadu coming in as a reclassed freshman, worked out well with Baycott and RJ. But having RJ back and, you know, listen, you know, I've been told by a bunch of sources here that there were plenty of teams that tried to squeeze RJ Davis, and squeeze is probably the wrong number because they gave him a big number to get in the portal and transfer. And he never did that because Carolina moved forward fairly quickly to make sure that he understood that they were going to give him fair market value. And also the benefit here was going to be, hey, listen, watch what Armando Baycott did and how revered he is and the connections he's going to have in Chapel Hill for the rest of his life. You're going to have those. You're also going to have a chance. We're going to surround you with enough that you can hopefully get back deep into the NCAA tournament. And you're not an NBA player right now. You're not going to get anything more than a two-way. So go back, make more money, play for a program that, again, you've got strong connections with, and it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, he's going to have a chance to win a national title and a National Player of the Year award at one of the most storied programs in the history of college basketball. And the fact that he did not opt to enter the portal and decided to come back to school instead of going out and chasing. I promise you that if he had gone to the portal, he probably would have gotten a bigger number than he's going to get from North Carolina. That's just the way that these things work. When you drive up the demand, the number is going to get higher. So to see him come back and kind of say, this is what I want, this is where I want to be, is a it's a pretty cool thing. And I will be rooting for him. I want to see good things happen. I want to see guys that make this decision to come back to school get rewarded, because I do think one of the biggest issues that we have in college basketball right now is there is not enough continuity year over year with some of these players. But you mentioned something. You said that North Carolina said that they were going to have enough around him to be able to compete for a national title. Right now, what they got, Seth Trimble has pulled out of the portal. Elliott Cadeau is coming back to school. They had a couple of really good freshmen coming in on the wings, and Ian Jackson and Drake Powell, who both seem like they're more of the Seth Trimble kind of addition than they are going to be like a Cooper Flag level addition. Jalen Weathers is back. Harrison Ingram is back. Jalen Washington is back. Zaden High is back. They probably need to go out and find another big guy in the portal somewhere. But I do think that on paper right now, even if they don't get that big guy, bringing back Cadeau, bringing back Seth Trimble, bringing back Harrison Ingram, pretty much guarantees that you're going to be in the mix for at minimum an ACC title this season.
I mean, you got your perimeter trio, right? I mean, those three guys, RJ, Cadeau, and Trimble. Those are going to eat up the bulk of the minutes. And like you said, Zaden High is a kid that I know Armando Bacot's really, really high on. We've talked about him, and he thinks he could have a breakout year with a ton of minutes in front of him. So, you know, if you go Zaden High, who's a 6'9 sophomore, didn't play a whole heck of a lot this year, with Jalen Washington, you know, Withers is a rotation forward. And then you got Ian Jackson, who's going to fight for minutes also in the perimeter. Mm-hmm. You and I saw him last year, talented. What I didn't like about him when I saw him in the AU circuit, his team lost by 30 and they all quit. And that, again, I only saw him a couple times, but I can't get that out of my head. I know he's talented. I didn't love that. Drake Powell, talented as well, comes in with a big rep. So they probably need another guy or two in the portal. And I'm not sure, like, they need one high level, probably interior presence type guy. And then probably just one other piece, Rob. Probably one other, like, big wing who can defend at a high level. And I know Trimble can defend, like another shooter, I guess, because Cadeau's not a shooter. So maybe that's what it is, a 6'5 dude who can just stand out there and drill threes.
Yeah, like Kobe Brea, who is, if you want to know how, well, what teams are valuing right now in the portal, look at a guy like Kobe Brea, who averaged 11 points per game last year at Dayton. You know who's on his list right now, Goodman? It is Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, and UConn, the five blue bloods in the world of college basketball right now. Maybe someone like a Cade Tyson, the transfer from Belmont, just a bigger wing that can stand out there, be a little bit swishable, going to guard for you and going to make shots to pull people away from the basket. But you're right. They also need a big body, big interior presence. I want to ask you this because I do think it is an interesting comparison now based off of what happened with Duke this year and what happened with North Carolina last year, right? Last year in the portal, there were a lot of people, not me. I got this one right, but not me. But there were a lot of people that thought that North Carolina went backwards in the portal last year because they lost a guy like a Caleb Love, and then they brought in a bunch of pieces to build around the guy that they thought was going to be their All-American. I think what we're seeing right now with Duke is a similar situation where they've lost a bunch of people in the portal, and they went out and they brought in pieces to build around a guy that they think is going to be their All-American in Cooper Flagg. Might we be jumping the gun a little bit on kind of doubting what this Duke program is going to be? Am I crazy when I see some similarities there in terms of what Shire is doing this year and what Hubert Davis did last year?
Yeah, I mean, like, there are some similarities. They don't come in with the same rep. You know, Harrison Ingram still came in last year. He didn't have a great year, and they didn't have a good year at Stanford the previous year, but he came in with a pretty big rep, let's be honest. Cormac Ryan, again, came in from a losing program, but you knew who he was, right? Like, you know, I think people look at this group so far, and you're looking at Malik Brown and
Mason Gillis.
Who else? Who?
Mason Gillis.
Yeah, Mason Gillis from Purdue. Thank you. So hard to keep track of everybody right now. Seriously, it's virtually impossible to keep track of everybody and where they're going. You got so many kids committing every day. So Malik Brown and Mason Gillis, and you're like, they're two pieces, right? Like Mason Gillis, obviously a proven shooter. Malik Brown, more of a Swiss Army knife type guy, but, you know, both are big, strong, physical. You know, you look at it on the surface, you're like, eh, okay. But like, they've got enough high-end talent. That's not the issue. It's plugging the holes with these veterans that are going to buy in their role, that are going to be able to do exactly what John Shire needs them to do around Proctor, around Cooper, around Caleb Foster. So, you know, I think sometimes we make too much, because the most talented teams, Rob, generally they haven't won the whole thing. Like, again, you make fun of me for saying, like, Indiana's starting five, that game was almost as talented as UConn's. But do you think UConn was the most like talented team in the country this past year? No, of course they weren't. Dan Hurley did a hell of a job, and those kids did a hell of a job. But, and they've made themselves into probably pros. Like, I think Cam Spencer now makes an NBA roster. But do you think Cam Spencer would have been an NBA player had he come out of Rutgers a year ago? Hell no. No chance. Alex Caravan wasn't really on the NBA radar for the most part until this season. Like, those kids have developed and been coached and gotten better. They've gotten better, but they're not the most talented team in the country. And Duke's not going to be, from 1 to 12, the most talented team in the country next year. But if they're put together well, they'll have a chance to go to a Final Four.
Okay. I'm just going to say this because I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't go to sleep at night. I wouldn't be able to wake up in the morning if I didn't say this. UConn may have the first two college players drafted in the NBA draft. They have two guys that are projected on most mocks to be top 10 picks. And there's a very real chance that all five players in their starting lineup, Cam Spencer, Tristan Newton, and Alex Caravan included, all end up hearing their names called on NBA draft night. So there's a real chance that five guys from UConn's team could end up getting drafted, including two top five picks and the two top picks out of the college ranks, but they weren't the most talented team in college basketball. Arizona, your alma mater, we're going to talk about them here right now. They went out in the portal and they added Trey Townsend, who was, I think you can make the argument, one of the best fours that was available. We saw what he did against Kentucky in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I more specifically remember his performance in the title game of the Horizon League tournament. I think he went for like 37 in that game. He's a senior. He's an upperclassman. He's 6'9". He's 235. He's built like a high major kid. With some of the pieces that Arizona has lost, Kai Boswell, Omar Ballo, a couple of the Euro kids ended up leaving. Where do you stand right now on Arizona as we head into next season? Because they do have a pretty good sophomore class. They have some nice freshmen coming in.
Yeah, I'm not super high on them yet. Like, I still don't know if they have that high-end talent, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but unless Caleb Love comes back. Like, who's that dude? I mean, you got Jaden Bradley back, and, you know, KJ Lewis was pretty good last year. But I look at their roster and I don't want to say I'm underwhelmed, but I kind of am underwhelmed if Caleb Love doesn't come back. Again, you know, Townsend's a good piece. Crevis was a good backup. They got some freshmen coming in that are talented, but we kind of know how that goes with freshmen. I mean, they lost a lot. Like, Pella Larson was huge for them. Ballo was like, they had a lot of guys you kind of knew what you were going to be able to get from this year for the most part. So I think it hinges heavily on whether Caleb Love returns and whether this Arizona team can be a major player in its first year in the Big 12.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. It's worrisome to me that all of their program guys have gone, right, have entered the portal, whether it's Kai Boswell, whether it's Umar Ballo. I know Larson didn't enter the portal. He's gone pro. But the guys that kind of were the stalwarts for the Tommy Lloyd era at Arizona are not there anymore. I do think that you have Jaden Bradley, Caleb Love, and KJ Lewis with Trey Townsend. That's a pretty damn good place to start. I really like the Carter Bryant kid that they have coming in. I think that these freshmen are going to end up being good. And the thing that would be promising to me, Jeff, is that you're going to ask them to play a role as opposed to being stars. But, yeah, point taken. Listen, when we get back, we got to talk about Purdue and Illinois because we have two different sides of the way that these two teams are using the portal, two best teams in the Big Ten. Is there a reason to be worried about either of them next season? Whether you are a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. After a six-month season loaded with cross-country travel, I can promise you that proper recovery is a priority for me these days. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of The Field of 68. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or the EE system. If you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New Jersey or at one of the hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/unified68 to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/unifyd68. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Field of 68 After Dark, the Thursday evening pre-NFL Draft Edition. Jeff Goodman, how good is Caleb Williams going to be? Is he going to be the next Tom Brady? He's going to be the next Russell Wilson? How good is this quarterback going to end up being?
No, I'm all about Drake May. I'm all about Drake May. And if the Patriots don't take Drake May tonight, I'm done. I'm going back to being a Philadelphia Eagles fan, which I grew up as. Mike Quick, Wilbert Montgomery, Harold Carmichael. They're names that nobody's heard that's watching this program right now. But, yeah, I'm done with the Patriots if they don't take Drake May tonight. Done.
I'm speaking for everybody within the greater Philadelphia area when I say that we don't want you. Stick to Boston. We don't want you. All right, let's talk about Purdue and Illinois. I want to start with Purdue because they're losing Zach Edey, and that is going to be a massive loss. Both literally and figuratively. But they do get Braden Smith, the Foster Lawyer, back. They do get Cam Heidi and Miles Colvin and William Berg, who I think has a chance to be pretty good. And Trey Kaufman-Wren is back. They have a good freshman class coming in. They have 14 players for 13 spots right now, Jeff. They've lost Mason Gillis. They lost Ethan Morton. I don't know if those are necessarily things that Matt Painter is going to cry himself to sleep over, but where do you stand on Purdue as we look into next season? I don't think that they're going to be the same level they were these last 2 years, but I would not be shocked if we looked up in February.
Gee, Robert, you're really going out on a limb there when they lose the two-time National Player of the Year, and you're saying they're not going to be at the level they were at the last 2 years? Boy.
Well, my question is, how big of a step down
are we? There it is.
How big of a step down are we taking, though? Because I do think that they are going to be competing for a Big Ten title again next season. I don't think that that's crazy.
I hope you go out on that limb and the limb breaks. I hope you go right up the limb and the limb just completely snaps and you fall. And
there's a better chance it would have been a better chance that the limb broke about probably 3 weeks ago. I'm down like 6 pounds. Good, man. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm healthy. I'm working out again. Yeah, it's great. I got to get this beach body back.
Hey, we still have the video of you trying to catch that football. You did not move very well 3 weeks ago. So I hope you're moving better. I hope you are.
Yeah, I'm not diving on the pavement to go catch one of the terrible throws from Tristan Freeman. What are we doing?
All right.
Here?
Anyway, Purdue.
Those are what we call duck farts, Goodman. The one that kind of go like this as they come at you, the fluttering ones. I wasn't trying to catch any duck farts.
Nobody wants to hear about your lack of athleticism. Anyway, Cam Heidi, I think, is going to take a step forward. I think we're going to see a real, like, they're just going to be balanced. This Purdue team is going to be completely different than the one we've seen the last 2 years, especially this past year when they're just tossing the ball in to the big boy every single time. And now you're going to see, to me, again, more balance. Trey Kaufman ran, we saw, like, he's going to average, I don't know, what would you guess, 14 and 7 this year, probably somewhere around there, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think Cam Heidi's ready.
Mm-hmm.
Braden
well,
Smith,
I just I think Trey Kaufman Ren is going to end up being there. Yep, I think TKR is going to end up being an All Big Ten big guy, and then Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. You can probably make an argument that that's one of the best backcourts, not just in the Big Ten, but in college basketball. Period. I think Miles Colvin takes a step forward as well. I think you got shooters on the wings. I think you could build around Kaufman Ren at the 4/5 spot. You still have Caleb First. You got a couple freshmen coming in. So I really like where they are right now. And I do think, Jeff, tell me if you think this is crazy. I think that when we get to March, we're going to be having a real conversation about whether or not Braden Smith is the best point guard in college basketball.
Well, here's what I'd say to that is I want to see him without Zach Edey to be able to say that, right? Like you have Zach Edey there. It takes some pressure off you. I love Braden Smith. I want to see if he can be a dude and be the number one option on a team at his size. I love him. I just think, again, like the offense is going to be completely different. This is going to be more of a team of like back when like Hummel played with Etuan Moore and Juwan Johnson, and maybe not even at that level talent-wise, because I hate to admit it, but Rob was pretty good when he was healthy, and Etuan Moore played in the league for a long time, and Juwan Johnson played overseas for a long time. I just think this team's going to be deep. They're going to be balanced. They're going to have a lot of weapons. They're going to be able to shoot it. They're going to be more athletic in a lot of ways. They're just not going to have that big boy, which is going to hurt them in a lot of ways. But again, they won't be nearly as reliant as they were to go to the well and trade twos for threes, which is generally not the way to win at the highest level consistently right now, or at least in the NCAA tournament consistently.
All right, hold on 1 second, Goodman, because I just have to write this down in my notes app real quick. April 25th, 7:22 p.m. Eastern time, Jeff Goodman said something nice about Robbie Hummel. Okay, good. Wanted to make sure that I had that time and date saved. I think it's really interesting to me to compare Purdue right now and Marquette. I know they just signed that deal to do a home and home, which is awesome, by the way. Can we get more of these big time programs playing home and homes on home courts, taking advantage of the thing that's great about college basketball, playing on site on campus games? I love it. I am so into this idea of Purdue and Marquette having their series. But Marquette is another program that is not really going out and attacking the transfer portal. Right now, the way things kind of stand with them is they have Cam Jones coming back. They have David Joplin coming back. They have Stevie Mitchell coming back. Sean Jones should be healthy. Chase Ross should be healthy. They have four sophomores who should be pretty good. A couple freshmen coming in. Tyler Kolek's gone. My guess is that Oso is probably going to end up being
He's gone.
Yeah. So he's gone. And I'm just in 2024, in this era of college basketball, can you build a program like this? Can you sit here and develop guys over the course of 2, 3, 4 years? I think the one thing that can be said about both these programs is that you don't see them shuffling people out the door, right? You don't see transfers leaving in mass. And I think that to me is the biggest sign of anything else that yes, you can win at the highest level and you don't have to go out and spend every April just sitting there refreshing the portal, trying to rebuild your roster.
Cam Jones needs to be a All-American type player this year in order for Marquette to be nationally relevant in the sense that they can be a player come March. He needs to he just does. I just don't know where else they're going to get it from, Rob. I mean, they lost their all-everything guy in Tyler Kolek, and Oso was pretty damn good too. Now, again, nobody saw either of those guys really coming. Right? Nobody saw Kolek when they got him from George Mason turn into what he did. And Oso was also a guy that they weren't sure would do what he did, although he was inconsistent down the stretch. They got to find a dude. And I just don't know who it is other than Cam Jones on the roster right now. I mean, you look down like Stevie Mitchell, Sean Jones, nice players. Joplin, Ben Gold, nice players. Like, who's going to be the guy with Cam Jones? Rob, who's it going to be? Because I'm worried. I'm legitimately concerned they're going to fall off and fall off big this year.
I don't think that they're going to fall off big. I don't think that they're going to be as good as they were the last couple of years where we were talking about like winning the Big Ten, the Big East title in 2023, winning the Big East tournament in 2023, being a potential, what were they, a 2 seed last year. I don't think that they're going to quite be at that level. I don't see them falling off that far because I do think Sean Jones can take another step. I do think Chase Ross can take another step. Trey Norman is a guy that I would be pretty excited about if I was a Marquette fan. And I would not be surprised to see David Joplin or Ben Gold and potentially both of them end up being better than they were last year. I think it's one of those things where they have to be, but I also don't think that you just you look at and say, okay, there's one person that's going to be able to fill this void that is left. You can't just replace Tyler Kolek. You can't just replace a two-time All-American point guard. Like you don't just replace him. You got to find different guys to be able to step up. They're probably going to have to play a different way. I would not be shocked to see them go a little bit more all-out press. Like when you have Sean Jones and Chase Ross and Stevie Mitchell together in a backcourt, you might as well just go and just maybe we even see Havoc again out of Marquette. Whatever it is, I do to a point trust Shaka and his staff to kind of put this thing together and figure it out. But you are right. There is going to inevitably, when you lose two NBA players and one of whom was an All-American for 2 years, you're going to take a step backwards. And I would not be shocked to see them as like the 4, 5, 6 seed kind of a range this year. Illinois, it's another team that's losing a lot, right? Marcus Domask is gone. Eric Cannon is gone. Justin Harmon is gone. Coleman Hawkins is in the NBA draft. He's probably going to end up being gone. Quincy Guerrier is gone. Dane Danger is gone. Luke Goody is gone. It feels like every single person that mattered on that team last year, the reason why booty ball was a thing for Illinois this past season, is not going to be there anymore. So with Kai Boswell coming in, with Trey White coming in, with Kerry Booth coming in, with Jake Davis coming in, with a couple of these freshmen coming in, with Ty Rogers coming back, where do you stand on Illinois right now, considering they just went out and dropped a bag on an assistant in I forget, is it Oliver or Orlando or Antigua? Orlando. I can never remember which Orlando. One was which. Orlando. Okay.
Oliver is the former high school coach at St. Rice. I like them. Like, I think they're still a tournament team. I want to see more before I make pass judgment on kind of where this Illinois team can be this year. But I think they've got enough good pieces. Again, you look at Kai Boswell, I think will be better this year for the most part. Ty Rogers is still what he is. Kerry Booth is talented. I like that addition, to be honest. Calvin's son, who played at Notre Dame last year and long and talented. Trey White, talented, obviously started his career at USC. than Louisville, which was a shit show over there. They still have more work to do. They have more work to do. But again, I think if you're an Illinois fan and you look at what you lost and you say, hey, listen, if we're a tournament team again this year, and maybe we win a tournament, a game in the NCAA tournament, we'd sign up for that, you know, and not falling off the map, which again, if you told me you'd lose everything you did from last year, mainly Shannon and Domask and Colton Hawkins, then you would say to yourself, like, this is a complete rebuild. And the beauty these days, there's really no complete rebuilds anymore. You can do it quickly.
Can they get any of the guys that Kentucky was targeting? Like, if you're bringing in Antigua, are you also potentially bringing in some of these freshmen that were committed to Kentucky that have not yet signed anywhere else? Some of these transfers that we thought were going to have a chance to be able to go to Kentucky, maybe someone like a DJ Wagner or a Dude Thoreau or some of these guys that left the Kentucky program. Is there a chance to be able to get some of them? Is that part of the value of going out and dropping a bag on Orlando Antigua?
I don't know. I mean, Orlando was there before and he helped build this thing for Brad. You know, that's the beauty. He knows what Brad wants. And, you know, I think Brad has adapted. Brad has really adapted over the last probably 5 years or so, and give him credit for doing that. Not only on the court, even off the court a little bit. He's certainly gotten a little softer. We've talked about this with Tyler than he was years ago. But I think, again, you know, if they've got NIL, they've got that, so they could still be a player for some of these top end guys that are either in the portal right now or the guys that are going to pop here. And again, one of the things you got to think about if you're an Illinois fan or whatever, if you're an Illinois coach, is do I save some of this money for the 11th hour? Because the 11th hour, and I'm not talking about this week when kids go in the portal, I'm talking about those kids that withdraw from the NBA draft and go back to school and are available late. And a lot of these schools will have already blown all their money and may not have enough NIL left. And it might be a kind of a last team standing at that point. Who's got the money at that point? Who saved it? Again, I've said this, it's kind of like fantasy football auction. Like, do you spend all your money early? Do you save it? Because you might get a stud late if you save it.
Jeff, nobody cares about your fantasy football team. I do. I think I'm higher on, and I know that Illinois fans tend to be the stressful type, specifically our producer, Trevor Valise, who wants Illinois to win more than just anybody wants to win. I think I like this roster more than like, if your starting point right now, and you still got to add a couple pieces, but if your starting point is Kai Boswell coming home, right? Second chance guy, probably needed a reset. Trey White, who is talented. Ty Rogers, a versatile piece at the five. Jake Davis, who is a 6'6" sophomore that shot like 39% from three on about five attempts per game last year at Mercer. And a guy in Kerry Booth, who is a high upside, skilled, well-coached five guy, 4/5, whose father is an NBA. Like, you watch Kerry Booth play and you can see the potential and you can see that he's been well-coached. I like this. I like the core that they have there. They got to add a couple more pieces, but I think it's very different than some of these other teams. They don't need to add a star. They got their potential stars. They got the guys you could build around. Now you just got to fill out the roster a little bit. Listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking about a different Big Ten team, Michigan. Dusty May. He's going to tell us why he left the beautiful beaches of Boca Raton for Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you haven't heard by now, we have partnered with BetMGM Sportsbook. We are going to be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 throughout the year. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use bonus code FIELD, and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. The best part, all you need to do is deposit and bet $10 of your own hard-earned money to be eligible. Here's how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using that bonus code FIELD. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. and you will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if your bet loses. Just make sure that you use that bonus code FIELD when you sign up. BetMGM is going to have some fun offers available throughout the NBA playoffs. Bet insurance tokens, odds boost, and what I love, a nice parlay boost or two from time to time, as well as a ridiculous array of player prop bets for any sport that you could possibly imagine betting on. BetMGM is and always will be the king of the prop bet. So go download the BetMGM app, use the bonus code FIELD, and sign up today. And while I've got you, a quick request. The best way to support the Field of 68 content that you get for free is to engage with us. Rate and review the podcast. Like and share the YouTube videos. Tell your friends about us. It all helps in a world where the algorithm is king. And now, back to the show. And now let me welcome on to the Field of 68, none other than new Michigan head coach, Dusty May. And Dusty, I got to ask you, you got to be honest with me here. Is part of the reason that you took the Michigan job because you knew that Jeff Goodman was much less likely to head to Michigan in the middle of the winter than Boca Raton? How much did that have an impact in your decision-making process?
That certainly played a factor. There was probably three or four things we were looking at, and how to avoid Goodman was definitely top three.
Yeah, I just want to know, like, we set up this whole Field of 68, I forget, tip-off, invitational, I forget what we called it, whatever it is. We set it up around you, and you leave after 1 year. So can we get Michigan in the new Field of 68 invitational?
Well, I will say that the forecasting what happened, you know, to avoid having to go to Charleston and Liberty was well played on my part, jokes aside. Those are two unbelievable mid-major jobs with, you know, that are always going to be good. So, you know, that's going to be a tough spot for the next staff. But, you know, luckily we came away with a couple wins this year.
All right, Dusty, in all seriousness, you had your pick of jobs this offseason. What was it about Michigan that was that made it the place that you wanted to be?
I think part of it is just I live there. I live Ypsilanti, which is a neighboring town of Ann Arbor. I had such a high regard for this university and what it stood for and the power of the Block M, the brand. And so it, you know, in an interview, because I floored at that time and moved my family. And then I came down and I met the people and I drove on campus and drove around Boca. And I just thought, wow, this fits me. I think we can attract some good players here and a quality staff. So I thought the same thing at Michigan. It usually comes down to where do you feel like you can attract guys you really, really want to work with and serve. And also at a place, can you attract the right type of players for the way you want to coach and how much you enjoy going to work every day. So all those things played a part. So all that's wrapped up into the word I use too much. It's fit.
How crazy was it, Dusty, when you were going through all this, season ended, even before the season ends now, it's hard as a coach because you've got people coming at your agent, people trying to contact you for the jobs that are open. A year ago, you went so deep that really there was nothing you could do, even if you wanted to go anywhere. How crazy was it, you know, when you know, getting down to the end of the season at FAU and when the season ends, to have to deal with, you know, Ohio State, Vanderbilt, Michigan, all these schools from a guy that, again, never would have expected this in a million years, a few years ago, let's be honest. Like this wasn't something you necessarily saw coming as recently as a year and a half ago.
Well, last year was almost identical, just the level of jobs. It wasn't the same capacity, but it was the same calls, the same, you know, I guess, feelers. And luckily we have representation that can, you know, you speak well in advance of things that you know, drive you and you're looking for. And so they handle all the small talk and conversation. The hardest part is when you get on your flight home whenever you lose first round of the tournament in overtime and you think you're at least going to be able to decompress with family, you know, our parents are at games and friends and whatever. And they say your charter flight leaves in 3 hours to go back home. And so, you know, I'm getting on the plane and I get a text that said, you know, someone would like to come down and meet with you tomorrow. And I was like, man, we're not even going to get in until 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm exhausted. You know, I felt like I hadn't slept in a couple of weeks just because we were at the end of the season. And so all of it happens so fast. And then you go meet with them and everything lines up. And then you're re-energized to start something new. And until then, I didn't realize maybe I'd gotten a little bit comfortable and stale. I don't want to say complacent because I would never be complacent. But this, I guess, energized me like I hadn't had since the first year at FAU. And it felt different. But also that was a good sign that I was energized to try to get this thing going.
Yeah, well, we can tell that you've been energized because you went out this weekend and added probably like half of your roster out of the portal. So now that you have this new team and these new faces, what is the key, the most important part of taking this roster and building it into a team that can win games?
Well, we went into it very intentional with trying to make sure that it fit the skill sets, the personalities, the aspirations. We made sure on paper and on film the guys made sense. And so now it's going to come down to, can we develop a team first mindset? Can we convince everyone in our locker room, staff included, myself included, that if we give, then at the end of the day, then you're going to receive back more than you ever imagined. So it's nothing that we haven't had to do every single year. I feel like our job as coaches, we're problem solvers, and sometimes we solve them better and more efficiently than others, but that's our job. So there will be things that come up, but just molding a team, really getting guys to care about each other and care about something bigger than themselves. And usually there's only a few of those. Mike Davis said it 2 years ago. He said there'll be about five teams at the end of the season that are true teams. And if you guys don't change, you could be one of those. And we kind of held on to that all year, 2 years ago, that if we can continue to be a real team, then we'll maximize our individual talents. So we're looking for the same thing this year.
When Mike White, who obviously you worked for, went from Louisiana Tech to Florida, he told me one of the hardest things for him was dealing with some of these highly touted kids that came in, right? The top 50, top 25 kids, and maybe some of the stuff that came along with them. This past year, you dealt with kids that, again, weren't highly recruited necessarily, but they had gotten a lot of hype over the last offseason. And again, that was a big part of what you had to manage this past year. What did you learn that you can kind of take forward now to maybe dealing with a higher level recruit and a big time, you know, some of these big time transfers that come in from this past season?
I don't think it's anything that I learned per se. We all know it's difficult when you're dealing with extremely talented, motivated individuals, and there's one ball and five players on the court at a time. Now, would I have done several things differently? Absolutely. You try to anticipate what your biggest problems are going to be. You get out ahead of them. But there were, absolutely, I learned that I would have attacked the offseason a little bit differently with the messaging, the daily and weekly messages that we were putting out. I would have changed those a little bit and tailored them more towards the group. But once again, you know, we brought back that team. Everyone on our roster worked like crazy to improve as individuals. And so naturally, when you get back to it, they want to show what they've worked on, what they've added. And with our group, there wasn't much room for addition. And then, you know, we dealt with some injuries that people don't realize that made us unique. Giancarlo Rosado wasn't healthy off season. And when you go back and look at our Final Four run, he was as productive as anyone on our roster. He was out. Trey Carroll, who evolved into a really offensive force, he missed our last several games. Nick Boyd missed a lot of games early. So we never really settled into our roles. Guys were going playing 30 minutes and then had to drop down to 20 to make room for other guys. So I learned a lot, but it wasn't as if these things weren't in the front of our mind. We just probably attacked some of the wrong areas, I would say.
When you are in the portal, when you are trying to, you're kind of, it's almost like speed dating with these recruitments, right? Like you had, instead of having the year or two when you're recruiting a freshman, it's like you get a week, basically. You get a couple of Zooms and maybe the kid's coming on a visit. What are you looking for? What are the identities of a transfer that that you're trying to bring in to develop a culture at a new program?
there has to be a baseline of talent, obviously, and positional need at times. But we do look for positional versatility, guys that can slide up a spot or two, down a couple spots when needed. We definitely plug in a lot of numbers and look at efficiencies and shooting percentages. And then we go to the film, and then we really try to analyze, are these numbers factual, or are they situational? Did he shoot poorly because of this? And really try to dig into it and do a deep dive into it after we feel like we have a good chance at them. So early on, you try to get involved. You look at the data. You go through synergy and look at some clips and try to figure out, does he have the talent you need? And then once you get to second base, we really try to dive in and figure out, is this guy a fit for us? Can we help him? Or is this who he is and what he is? And then also, we all follow the game, and we're all, you know, out in the summer talking about guys and watching.
Wait for you to unfreeze here.
We might have lost him for good.
We'll see. There he is.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, we got you back now. Yep, we got you
okay.
back.
Okay, the viewers are very grateful that they you cut off on that tangent. We look at how they fit into our style of play. We always recruit shooting, as Coach Beilein said. If they can't shoot, don't recruit. So if they don't have great numbers, then we try to figure out why, if they have good form and whatnot, if we can help them. And we even go back several years to look at how, you know, their most productive seasons or their least productive seasons. So we look at it from a lot of different views, but we rely on other people that we trust to tell us the characteristic traits and things like that. And also winning, obviously. If they come from winning programs, then they start ahead of some other guys.
I'm just imagining Goodman trying to figure out what effective field goal percentage is or offensive rating is while you're sitting here talking about the transfer that you're getting, instead of just being like, he averaged 19 points a game. Look how good he was.
The eye test, baby, the eye test. All right. Speaking of which, the eye test told me that the Fab Five was pretty darn good back in the day. I didn't need any advanced metrics to tell me that Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Juwan Howard and all those guys could play. Have you talked to any of them? Because I think that was one of the things that we all thought, like, okay, they supported Juwan Howard, obviously. They were at the game last year. Webber and Jalen Rose finally made up and all that. Have you tried to bring those guys in yet, or have you been too busy in the portal? And that'll be a task down the road to kind of get those former guys in the program, to keep them in the program.
A day, and sometimes it might just be three guys off the same team. Sometimes it might just be four or five guys from the 70s. And so I haven't connected with those guys, but I've connected with a lot of great former Michigan players, and it's incredible how much they love this program. You know, there's been some coaching transition. It's not as if there's been one coach here 30 years. They've had several coaches, several different eras, but they've all been successful, and every player that I've spoken with really, really cares about the Block M, and they have a lot of pride having played at Michigan.
All right, Dusty, you have Big Ten roots. Been a while since you've been back in the Big Ten. How steep is the learning curve going to be for you trying to figure out this league, these teams, some of the new additions to the league like UCLA and USC? Are you sitting here watching games from last season? How do you get yourself acclimated to a new conference?
Right now, typically in a normal year, every job I took as an assistant or head coach, you were watching a game a day. You're watching one from the last season. You're watching league opponents. Now, as frequently as coaches change jobs. So, I haven't had an opportunity. It's been recruit film and a little bit of Michigan basketball last year to watch the returners, to evaluate them in practice and in games and things like that. But I have had a chance with 18 teams. I'm not sure anyone's had enough time to study the league that they're in.
So do you think you're going to get cheered or booed when you go back to Bloomington, Indiana?
I have no idea. I would say if we win, I'll be booed. If they win, I'll be cheered.
Yeah, I'll tell my daughter will cheer for you. I promise. She won't boo you.
for those 2 hours, I'm the enemy, though. I get it.
So you've got how many players on your roster? I got down here 5 transfers, 2 incoming freshmen. I don't know if you could talk about all these guys if they've signed yet. I think they have. Is that right? You got 7 guys right now, like officially on your roster? Does that sound right?
I'd be lying if I said exactly. We have some moving parts where 1 or 2 have signed or have not signed. We have 1 that's signed that hasn't released. Like there's some moving parts. So I can't answer that right now.
No,
sooner than later, we'll have an announcement and a press conference so we can announce the entire group as a whole.
By now, you guys have surely heard about Autograph, an app founded by Tom Brady with the intention of disrupting the way that fans consume content covering their favorite teams. Here's how the app works. All of the podcasters and bloggers and digital creators covering a team have their content sent to that team's page in Autograph. Instead of having to bounce from site to site or try to navigate the only safe for work spaces that are left on X, you just scroll through Autograph. This isn't a hard sell. This is the truth. I'm a UConn fan. I use the Autograph app to keep up with the writers I read and the pods that I listen to. The best part is that every piece of content that you consume gives you reward points. The more you get, the more chances you have at things like discounted tickets and signed memorabilia. Here's the best part. We've partnered with Autograph to donate $1 to the V Foundation every time someone downloads the app using the code F68, with a minimum of $2,500 getting donated. The app is free, so download using the code F68 and help us raise some money and give Autograph a try. I promise you it will be worth it. And while we're here, a quick reminder, make sure that you subscribe to The Daily. We have new landing pages with deep dives into each coaching change, as well as a tracker that provides scouting reports on the transfers that have entered the portal that you are going to want to know about. It's just $50 for the year, which means that for less than $1 per week, you get analysis that our insiders send direct to your inbox every single morning. Hit the link below to subscribe. Welcome back to the Field of 68 After Dark. We are live here on Thursday night, leading you into the NFL draft. Jeff Goodman coming up next is going to be breaking down why Drake May is going to be the next Aaron Rodgers. That's where we're going to hit him on. That's what he told us earlier today. We just heard from Dusty May, and one of the interesting things that came up in that conversation, Jeff, it's something that I didn't really think about until he mentioned it, was that every time that there is a new hire in the high major ranks, or every time that a guy ends up going back to a school, all you end up thinking about, he said, is basically the amount of money that the NIL collectives are going to end up getting as a result of some of these decisions that are made. So let me ask you this. You wanted to talk about this. You had a take, so I'm going to kind of leave the floor open to you. But what has happened to the NIL market, the collective market, and the money that these kids can command based off of the way that some of these coaching changes happened over the course of the last month?
I mean, it's completely exploded. And a lot of schools weren't ready for this. A lot of coaches. I talked to one head coach last night, and he said, I thought we were in really good shape NIL wise. A year ago we were, and then all of a sudden we were not prepared for this. We were not prepared for John Calipari to go to Arkansas and command this type of money. Pat Kelsey to go to Louisville and get this type of money. Not only the new coaches, Rob, what it is the guys that had leverage, the Scott Drews at Baylor, the Nate Oates at Alabama, Chris Beard at Ole Miss. I mean, he got NIL. You could see it right now because he's put together a squad already. So, you know, now there's really a clear delineation between the haves and the have-nots. And the haves are probably the top 10, 20% right now in college basketball. There's a have-nots that's, you know, way down there. Like there's some that are way down there that have no money right now. And then there's a bunch of teams that are in that $1 million to $2 million range. But to me, you got to be minimum of $2 million right now to have a shot to get some of these big-time transfers. If not, you really have no chance.
So what is the market like for the players? Like we hear these crazy numbers thrown around. Like the rumor was $1.5 million for Jeremy Roach. The rumor was $1.2 million for Umar Ballo. And I'm sure that every number, the way that I've kind of operated is I've kind of said, like, take that number, cut it in half. And that's kind of what I'm assuming all of these kids are ended up getting. What is it at now? What are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I've been told by a bunch of coaches that the top probably 10 players in the portal, when it's all said and done, are going to make more than $1 million. You know, probably 5 to 10 guys will make more than $1 million. And the top 25 players in the portal will all make in the vicinity, somewhere between, like, you know, 7 and 9, something like that. So the market, again, has gone from these guys that were making 500 a year ago are making almost double that this year. And this is, again, these are numbers that we're not including everything in, because these kids, this is the number they're getting to kind of go there. And then afterwards, they can go out and get their own money NIL wise from big brands, national brands.
Let me put this into context for people. The way that it kind of works is that the numbers that we're talking about here, I'm just going to say, like, the 1.5 rumored for Jeremy Roach, whatever that is, that's the salary
1.5
that he is getting.
Rob, it was not,
I know, but I'm just saying the numbers that you hear get thrown out. All right. Those are the salaries these players are getting from the collectives. That's the pay for play stuff. Then everything else is the actual NIL stuff that they're getting.
Yes. Yes. So Jeremy Roach, I think it was not far off from the 1.5. I'll say that, but I don't think it was 1.5. So let's say, for argument's sake, you know, some of these guys are making, you know, $1 million, $1.2 million. Well, that doesn't preclude them from getting on campus and making a bunch of extra money if Adidas comes in, if Gatorade comes in, if even a big brand in that vicinity, in that region, comes in and wants to pay them. So they can make upwards now. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody makes more than $2 million total.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys I think can end up getting close to that, which is, you know, honestly, it's not – when you're the biggest name on campus and when you are one of the biggest names in the sport and you are able to kind of command some of that interest, good. Go make your money. It's going to be the most that you're probably going to be able to make in your basketball playing career if you are still coming back to school as a fourth or a fifth year senior. So I do not begrudge them at all. I would just love if it would be something where these guys would be able to make it at their same stop instead of having to go somewhere else to be able to get it. That's kind of the dream scenario for me. I don't know if it'll ever happen. Let's talk about some of these biggest names. We mentioned Kobe Brea earlier. He's down to 5. I'm not sure where he stands on his visits, but you can kind of tell how important he is to people in the transfer portal and some of these bigger programs just by looking at the list that he has. So I know you got some info on Aiden Mahaney. I know you have some info on Great Osibor. I know you have some info on Jonas Adu. So let's start with Aiden. What's the latest on his transfer recruitment and where he stands right now?
So he's visited Baylor already. He's going to Arkansas this weekend. Then he'll go to North Carolina. He's also got Alabama in the equation, but he hasn't set a visit there. The leaders, you know,
this is Jonas Adu. This is Jonas Adu, right?
Yeah. The leaders are right now probably Arkansas and Baylor. A lot of people thought Carolina was out. They're still in there. Again, Alabama doesn't have a visit set up yet. So Adu is somebody that, again, one of the best bigs on the market right now. And my guess is he'll choose between Baylor and Arkansas at the end of the day. So that's a big one. Aiden Mahaney, a huge one for me. I know you're not a big fan.
That's the guy that I actually asked you about on this question, not Jonas Adu. I did ask you about Aiden Mahaney. So why don't you fill us in on the guy that we all want to know about, Jeff?
Adu, you know, Aiden. I mean, you can see where I can get a little confused, right?
You got to turn your
Aiden Mahaney's on campus. Yeah, he's on campus at Storrs right now. I got to turn up my hearing aid, I guess. He's on campus at UConn right now. He just came from a visit to Virginia. He's been to Creighton. He's going to go to Kentucky. There's still a chance. I think he could go back to St. Mary's, but generally, once you put your name in the portal, you're not going back. You know, that's a rare one. So, you know, I think if you look at it and you say to yourself, like, where does he fit the best? I think you're looking at three elite offensive coaches, right? I mean, you're looking at Creighton and Greg McDermott. You're looking at Dan Hurley, what he's done over the last couple of years at UConn, and Mark Pope at, now at Kentucky, formerly at BYU. My question to you, I'm going to pose it to you about your UConn Huskies and Dan Hurley. Is Mahaney a good fit with Hurley and UConn?
I wonder about the personality aspect. You know him as a kid a little bit more than I do. So that's a little bit of a that's the big question I have. As a player, I think he'd be fine. I think there are guys that are still available that I think might be a little bit better than him. But he is a bigger guard. He is a shot-making guard. He can kind of play on the ball. He can play off the ball. You don't necessarily have to have him be the guy with the ball in his hands at all times. I think you could put him next to Hassan Diarra and have it be able to work. I think you could put him next to Ahmad Noel and have that be something that is able to work. He's got two years of eligibility remaining, so it's not just a one-year thing with him coming in. But I would not hate it if he was the point guard. I don't know if it's necessarily looking like a situation where you have Cam Spencer coming in again. Does that make sense? Like, I hope that the expectation is not for him to be a guy that ends up being a first team All Big East, potential All American, potential NBA player, because I don't think that that's quite what Aiden is.
Agreed. Last update quickly, Great Osabor, Utah State transfer, 6'8, 6'9, going to visit Kentucky, then Louisville, then Texas Tech. Then he's going to give his coach, Danny Sprinkle, who's now at Washington, the last shot on the visit. So, Osabor. I mean, you got a bunch of guys, but I will say this, Rob. The deadline is basically a week from today, May 1st. Look for some bigger names to jump in here because it's a deadline, as Jeff Borzella reported, not just for the undergrads, but also for the grad transfers.
Yeah, so all those guys that would normally be entering over the course of June and July are going to be entering by May 1st, the grad transfers as well. Listen, this has been the Field of 68 After Dark. Enjoy the NFL draft. Hopefully, Caleb Williams goes to the Bears.
May. Great.